the radio. No talking.
Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, everybody. It's Tim Jacquet. Welcome to another edition of Financing Your Small Business Today. I'm Tim Jacquet, your host. Today, we have the pleasure of having the security attorney, Jim, with Cassidy Law Firm, and also Jim McCallop with Timber Creek Corporation in Beverly Hills, California. This firm has over 40 years of experience in bringing companies public over the U.S. Stock Exchange. Welcome, gentlemen, and thank you for joining us this evening.
Thank you, Jim.
Okay. And pretty simple. We're going to keep this real simple. The format tonight will be we're asked for the introduction of both men. Also talk about the benefits, the pros and cons of becoming public, what companies should not consider going public. Also, we talk about the exchanges themselves, what the role they have in a company becoming public, the steps of becoming public, what you need to look for in looking for an attorney. And also, we'll talk about the Timber Creek process as a whole. I guess we can start with one of the gems. I guess we can start with Timber Creek, Jim McCallop. And just talk about yourself and your background and how you became in this market.
Yeah. I worked with Merrill Lynch. And Jim Cassidy and I have been taking companies to public together for about 14 years now. And a lot of people, Tim, don't realize that any company can go public. There's no revenue requirements. There's no earnings requirements. So that even a startup company can go public. And because of the fact that banks aren't making loans, and because it gives private companies the ability to go out and raise money as a public company, a lot more businesses are choosing to go public.
Wow. Okay, and Jim?
Tim, is that Jim Cassidy?
Yeah, Jim Cassidy, I'm sorry.
Yeah, well, I'm a securities attorney, and I've been partners with Jim McCallop now, as he says, for about 14 years. The name of the company is actually Tiber Creek, Tim.
Okay.
Many people refer to us as Timber Creek, so maybe that's the name we should have used. But what we do is provide a dual service. We take companies public through what they call a registration process, and they usually begin to trade on the OTC bulletin board, although there are other exchanges when they are qualified. And that is my part of it, the mechanical part of getting the company up and trading. Jim McKillop's part is the artistry. It's the connecting to the brokerage community for companies that need market support, and particularly for companies that are looking to raise capital. Because while going public, Jim and I think, is a wonderful idea, you have to have market support when you do go public, or you will have a stock without trading volume.
Okay, wow. What are the big benefits if we name them? I know you had a few on your website, but what are the big benefits of a company becoming public?
Well, there are several. First of all, as you might imagine, Jim McKillop and I are very fond of taking companies public, so we have a certain bias in that direction. And for most companies, going public offers a number of benefits. However, a company that does not fall in one of those categories should not go public. You need a reason, of which there are many, for going public. And some of those reasons are, of course, raising capital, which can be done directly when you go public or can be done after you go public. Having a trading market for your shareholders. There are many companies that go public that don't want to raise money immediately but want to have a liquid market for those people that have invested with them privately over time. And then there are some specialty reasons. If you have an employee stock option plan, there's some very specialty cases for companies that does not apply to most of them. But the two principal reasons for going public are to raise capital for the company and to give a liquid market for the shareholders of the company, including the founders.
In addition to that, Tim, oftentimes companies will go public because typically public company will get a much higher valuation than the same exact company when it's private.
So with
that increased valuation, then people will use the stock as a currency to trade for different things, making acquisitions or other companies. Some people take stock and trade it with different groups to then help create an investor relations campaigns.
Okay. Great.
It also gives the company instant credibility. It's, you know, as a private company, when you're going out and trying to raise capital, you know, you got a lot of people saying, you know, who are you? What are you all about? But by virtue of being able to have that ability to become a public company, it gives you a lot of credibility.
Okay. When you mentioned about raising capital, one of the benefits of raising capital, you mentioned before and afterwards. Can you talk about when you say before and afterwards? This is when you initially hire your attorney and you start your process. When can you? I know you can do that at any time as a company, but what can part of this process? When do you start raising money before and raising money afterwards?
Well, you're right, Tim, that you can raise money anytime. And there is a group, a large number of investors in the United States that want to get into companies before they go public. So a company can do a private offering,
okay,
telling the investors that they are going to go public and that their shares, the investor shares, are going to be registered. When you go public, we typically register the shares of the initial shareholders,
mm-hmm.
their shareholder base, and then we do one of two things. We can provide for a direct public offering, by which the company receives money, or we can simply take the company public on the basis of its selling shareholders and get them trading and let them work into a nice volume and market price. And when that happens, there are groups now, Tim, you'll be familiar with PIPEs offerings, and these are actually underwriters, they're statutory underwriters, but they are groups that come to companies once the companies are trading, once they have a volume and price, and offer to take away a certain amount of the stock, to buy the stock and then to resell it. When I was younger, Tim, the normal way for going public was to have an underwriter. And there were a number of underwriters at that time that specialized in smaller companies like Hambrecht and Quist, but they're not around anymore. And the new way of doing this thing is for a company to make a direct public offering, do it itself, advertise itself, build up a selling group after it has gone public, and hopefully encounter a PIPEs firm, a firm that will take away the stock for them once they are public.
Okay. So when they actually – this happens when they initially hire their attorney and then they do a – security filings, and then they start this process if they want to raise capital before?
The public part of the process comes after they are registered and after they are trading. That's correct. I mentioned that you can do some private placements before you go public because
okay.
there's a group of investors that likes to, as you might imagine, likes to invest in a company privately
oh.
before it goes public. But the PIPEs offering and the direct public offerings, those come once you are public.
Okay. So mainly if they go from the ground up, then they see a little bit better return because after they go public, of course, then they can build a little bit more energy of that. Okay. So, but there are all investment groups that will, before the company becomes public, officially trade it, if they can offer their stock to this group and use it there as a group of investors who want to buy it.
Correct.
Okay. Great. And also you were talking about companies also, besides raising capital, they can make acquisitions, and you mentioned another thing about liquidity in the markets. Can you talk about elaborate a little bit more on those?
Jim, will you take that?
Sure. If a company, it's kind of textbook Wall Street strategy. If a company wants to grow through acquisition, in other words, let's say there's an industry they're in, it may be a fragmented industry, and they want to go and acquire other companies, they'll often do that and usually do it with stock because of the higher valuations public companies usually get as opposed to the same private company. They will use the stock to make acquisitions in lieu of cash.
Okay. Great. If we're talking about the pros and cons, what a company should really, really consider and the pros and the cons of really becoming public. What are the downsides of these type of things besides losing your ownership share and the security? Can you kind of elaborate on those two items?
Well, as to ownership, and that's a question we get a great deal of.
Okay.
It occurs, of course, when the company becomes very successful, when there are enough buyers of its common stock so that the founders no longer own over 50%. But we incorporate all our public companies in Delaware,
mm-hmm.
and Delaware has something called undesignated preferred stock, and that stock is what we issue to founders because undesignated preferred can have more share votes than common stock. And my own favorite in this area is John Malone of Liberty Media, and he controls his company, a very successful public company, through supermajority stock, supermajority preferred stock. And in his case, each share of preferred stock has 2,000 votes. So that's how you keep control of a corporation.
Okay.
If it becomes very successful, the benefits that we are mentioning here. Basically, our approach is that if a company does not fall within one of the benefits, if it doesn't have a reason for going public, it shouldn't, because the downside is the expenses and maintaining a public company. You have to do periodic reports, and there's some cost to that. You have to have audited financials every year. There's some cost to that. The other downside, of course, is you want to make sure that you have a trading market for your stock. It isn't going to be what anyone wants if the stock is not trading at a decent price. But the pluses all include raising capital, liquidity for the shareholders. As Jim mentioned, the ability to acquire other companies in part by stock or in whole by stock, depending how good a negotiator you are. Rewarding and attracting key employees with stock options and those other benefits that most people are aware of.
Okay. Why Delaware? I've known for the past 20-some-odd years, a lot of companies have been leading to Delaware because of the security laws a lot?
Well, Delaware is a very management-friendly company, state, a very management-friendly state. And over the years, it has been the traditional situs of most corporations. Nevada is competing with it somewhat now. I still prefer Delaware. I like the management-friendly courts that are there. I like the abilities of corporate management that it allows, the things that a corporation can do. And it has, quite frankly, a great deal of prestige, particularly overseas.
Wow. Any particular reason why they have more prestige in Delaware versus the New York or Texas or California?
Yes, it's because so many companies are there. I mean, if you took a look at the roster, the top 500 U.S. companies, you'd find a vast majority of them are incorporated in Delaware. So to the rest of the world, without really realizing why companies are incorporated there, they do know that your principal large American companies are incorporated in Delaware, and they take that favorably.
Okay, wow. So I know we talked some information regarding reverse mergers. So what happened if a company is already incorporated, for example, in California? And can you talk about that process? They're incorporated in California, and now they need to go into a Delaware corporation. Do you?
And what we do is we maintain what they call virgin shells. They're not trading companies.
Okay.
They have no history, and the only shareholders are Jim and myself, and they're very clean, very pure corporations. The purpose of them is primarily to re-situs the client company in Delaware. Because when the client company, the private company, combines with the reporting company, it becomes a Delaware corporation. And it has the proper capitalization for a public company, 100 million common shares authorized and 20 million undesignated preferred shares authorized. And it has the additional benefit of immediately exposing a company to the financial community. Because when you combine with one of the reporting companies, you post you report it to the SEC, to the public SEC website, and it includes audited financials. And now when you begin the process of going out to the financial community and saying that we're going to be publicly traded in a little bit of time, we need some market support, then they have something to look at. It gives Jim McKillop something that he can take out and show them. And Jim, maybe you pick up on this.
Okay.
Yeah,
of a company that's, if the company's already public, then again, you know, it gives them some credibility. All public companies, you know, over-the-counter bulletin board, NASDAQ, Amex, New York Stock Exchange, all their filings are listed at the Securities and Exchange Commission website. You would just go to www.sec.gov. And you could find the filings on these companies. So a company that goes public in this manner can show people the filings immediately by asking them to go to SEC.gov. And, again, when you're a public company, because of the fact that you have to get audited financials and file quarterly reports, it gives you investors that much more confidence and gives the company that much more credibility. And thus it makes it a bit easier for them to raise capital.
Okay. So what I'm hearing is that you guys have virgin shell companies that you already started the process on, and then versus reinvent the wheel, you would actually take that person from California or Texas or whatever state and actually transfer their assets into this new corporation that's already have audited financials already have a filing with the Securities Exchange Commission. Is what I'm getting hearing.
Yes, that's right. We
okay.
Yeah, that's right, Tim.
Okay, so this makes the process a little easier. Only thing you have to do is to begin to update, than versus waiting for the whole process to go through the system.
And then there are three ways that you do a business combination. Typically, sometimes you merge the private company into the reporting company. Sometimes
okay.
you do a stock exchange where the private company stays independent. That's we find that's the way that most of our foreign clients would like to do it, become a wholly owned subsidiary of the reporting company. And then in certain circumstances, particularly when you want to leave debt behind, you just transfer assets to the reporting company.
Okay, wow. That's great information. I really appreciate it. The steps, this whole process of becoming public, can you talk about the steps from A to Z, from the beginning to the end, and the time frame it takes to go through this?
Yeah, and we're still on the legal, so let me take the part of that. The first thing we do is we are retained. We immediately transfer control of one of our reporting companies to the private company, and that's a process that we typically do in about a week. We transfer control. Then we gather from that company the information necessary to file a registration statement. They have to tell us about the company. We will have described it very slightly in the report that we filed after the change in control. That's a nice way of letting the financial community know who you are. But for the purpose of a registration statement, we need information about the company. And it's just a photo, you know, Tim, it's just a snapshot of the company as it exists. As Jim said, there's no need to have revenue. There's no need to have assets. It's just an explanation of the company. At the same time, the company is getting its financial statements. And when those two are done, we combine the private company with the reporting company. We've already turned over the change of control, but now we need to take the private company and put it in the reporting company by one of the three methods I mentioned. And we can do that as soon as we have those audited financials. And then immediately thereafter, we will file the registration statement. The whole part of up until filing the registration statement should take no more than a month. And once you file the registration statement, it ought to be declared effective. That's what the SEC says. They don't say they approve or disapprove. They declare effective. It will be declared effective in maybe 75 days. And at the same time that happens, we're going to apply to FINRA to have it traded. Jim, maybe you can talk about the FINRA application.
Yeah, market makers have to file a FINRA application. So you can do those concurrently with the registration statement to speed up the process.
Okay. And FINRA, acronym means?
Financial Industry Regulatory Authority. It
okay.
used to be the NASD, National Association of Securities Dealers. Now it's called FINRA.
Okay. And that's also another government agency. And when you go to the agency, it's where you apply for your stock symbol?
That's right.
Okay, great. Okay. So in this process, the company, when it's transferred to the reporting company, they have to go through another audit. How is that done? They have to go back and hire another CPA to go through all these financials?
No, there's one audit. And that is done by the client after they retain us. And that one audit will suffice both for the business combination and for the filing of the registration statement. And the audit has to be done by what they call a PCAOB agency. Now, about 10% of accounting firms are PCAOB. We have one that we work with all the time that we recommend, but you can use any PCAOB firm you want to produce the audit financials.
Okay, and what does PCAB stand for?
Well, let me see if I can do this. Public Company Accounting Oversight Board. Jim, is that right?
Yes.
Okay, great. Okay.
Yeah, and that if they're a member of that, then they can do audits for public companies.
Okay, great. Okay, so they update they audit. Now, I'm thinking, on the other hand, okay, you have a business who's been here for a while, who's going through the process, or you have a brand new business who really don't have anything. If the brand new business, you know, just starting out, they have $10,000 in cash, that's their audit, and they're moving forward from that, do you recommend them, or you say, hey, you need to build up sales or do this or that, or it pretty much it doesn't really matter? Does that make sense?
Want to take that?
Well, it's up to the company. I mean, that company, yes, it can go public. Some companies want to go public sooner rather than later because of a variety of reasons. One, because the credibility it gets as a public company, providing some liquidity for shareholders, maybe to make acquisitions, lots of different reasons. So if the company wants to go public at that stage, we'd be happy to assist them with that.
Right. Okay. So I'm just trying to think of the small things that probably kind of carry things far with people's explanation of things. And within those steps, if you move into after you have all this stuff done, and you mentioned it takes about 75 days on average to complete the whole process, or a little bit longer?
Well, that's in the time you file the registration statement, Tim.
Okay, I follow. Okay. And if a person who... now, you guys are licensed for the U.S. Do you do other markets like Canada, or is it just for U.S. only?
Sometimes we cross list, yes.
Oh, okay. Wow, you can go into the Canadian borders.
Yeah, you can also, we don't take companies public in China, but we take Chinese companies public in the U.S.
U.S., okay.
Yeah, we just did an Australian one recently.
Okay. And you can cross, okay, great. Talking about each stock exchange, and New York Stock Exchange, American, Bulletin Board, Pink Sheets, can you explain the different agencies, stock exchanges, and how a person, when they come in, will just go to, should they be a Pink Sheet company, should they be a Bulletin Board company, are they qualified to be over the American Stock Exchange or NASDAQ or New York? Can you talk about those? The differences of each exchange?
Yeah, you have the pink sheets. That's again, in the pink sheets, you don't need to no revenue requirements, no asset requirements. So any company can trade there.
Mm-hmm.
These are non-reporting companies. You don't need to file quarterly reports with the SEC. A level above that is the over-the-counter bulletin board. And on the over-the-counter bulletin board, you would be a reporting company, and you would file 10-Ks, a 10-K and a 10, and 10-Qs. So, again, on the over-the-counter bulletin board, that's the preferred place to trade for newer companies. As the company grows and develops some significant earnings, then they could look at NASDAQ. But I think even for a small company, starting out on the over-the-counter bulletin board is ideal.
Okay. And then versus going towards the larger. Any income requirements for the pink sheets or for the over-the-counter?
No.
Okay. Okay, great. About your company itself, can you talk about, I know you have a lot of things, services you offer. Can you talk about your company in general? And I know you have vast breadth of experience, but in general, about your company at Tiber Creek and how you actually make companies come public.
Well, I've described, Tim, I've described the legal part of it. I think the more interesting part to listeners is probably the interface with the brokerage committee, which is Jim's expertise.
Okay, great.
Yeah, well, for companies that want to meet with broker-dealers and investment bankers, we set up road shows with investment bankers. We got a proprietary database that we set up of several thousand investment banking firms, broker-dealers, registered investment advisors, institutions of various sizes, which we can put our clients in touch with. We'll set up road shows with them.
Okay. Is it really easy for them to get these type of investors, or and the economic environment we're facing right now, or is it still the same? They're still looking for a good investment?
Yeah, the situation never really changes for a good company that investors like. They'll always be able to raise money, but we could never say for sure how, and we never make any sorts of guarantees whether or not the companies will be able to raise money.
Okay. Any particular qualifications with these investment groups? What they normally look for a company? Is it certain industries they like better, service or product, or
different industries go out of favor. I mean, when oil prices are high, then oil and gas companies are of interest. Social media right now, as you probably know, is very hot.
Okay.
And high-tech companies are always attractive. Companies that want to grow through acquisitions are good. Companies that, high growth potential.
Okay.
It could be in a variety of industries.
So there is no particular industry that they say, hey, we don't like. And also returns are pretty good. They're pretty much open to anything.
Yes, we've seen over the years, Jim and I have seen favorites come and go. Jim, do you remember when casino companies were all the rage?
Yeah. Yes, I do. And employee leasing, the personal, the PEO industry, personal employment organizations. So, yeah, they change.
Okay. Any particular, without naming a client, what was your best and easy client to take on and company to take on was real successful? And you're looking at it and say, hey, this is 30 years later and they're going strong. Without naming the company, is any particular process that you work with this company and bring them, hey, they're still in business in 30 years? That's making sense?
Yeah, we do. We consider all our clients success if we get them public. We kind of gear them up to be public and be able to go out and access the capital markets. But, most of our clients are on the smaller side, not names that you would hear of, but some of them have graduated to an American Stock Exchange and
wow.
And NASDAQ.
Okay. Wow. One other question. If a company who's gone through this process of being public, and I would assume that, for example, maybe they don't have an extensive background in business and they are kind of swimming in the water trying to keep from drowning, is there any particular advice that you can give them to try to keep their head afloat? Is it, for example, we have applications of publicly traded companies and they're only making like, and it's probably on their end, they maybe a 1 or 2 employee operation, and they've done well at the very beginning, but between all of this new thing they're facing and becoming a public company, they're maybe lost focus. Is any type of industry or something kind of help keep these CEOs motivated and try to keep them focused in this particular direction for the benefit of the shareholders? Because I'm sure you have a lot of companies that go public and I'm not going to say that they fail, but they begin to lose focus. I'm looking for, is there a consulting company that can help guide these COOs to keep moving forward? If that's making sense?
Yeah. Well,
okay.
To re-motivate them, to refocus them, usually they'll want to get together with their board of directors
okay.
and determine the viability of their business model and make some judgments as to how to go forward based on a good board of directors.
Okay. But all these companies have to have a board of directors, and that's going to be...
Well, the board of, actually, the, it could, one person can be the board of directors for these small public companies.
Okay. Now, taking that into account, if there's one member or two members of board of directors, so this investment group who invested money in this particular company, are they automatically named, or are they not named if they don't own a certain share to the board of directors, or can they get on the board of directors, or do they usually ask to be on the board of directors?
That's a negotiating point, depending on how much they're investing. They'll sometimes ask for a seat if they're going to buy a large percentage of the company.
Okay. Wow. Well, anything else you want to go ahead and add about besides?
Yes, Tim. Well, first of all, Jim Cassidy and I really appreciate talking to you and your group, and we have some free reports on our website. Our website is www.tcc5.com, and that's T for Tom,
mm-hmm.
C for Charlie, 5.com, and that's the number 5.
Okay, great.
So we have some free reports if anyone wants those, or they can call us at 310-888-1870. We'd be happy to send them out some additional information and answer any follow-up questions.
Great. And can you repeat that that telephone number again?
Sure. It's area code 310-888-1870.
Perfect. And your website is
www.tfortiber, C for Creek, C for Corporation, 5, just the number 5, .com.
Great. Guys, I really appreciate your time. You can also download this broadcast on Blog Talk Radio on the link itself, and also is available on iTunes and podcasts. Again, guys, thank you for your time, and I appreciate you talking to us and telling us of the steps of having your company to become public. Again, you can reach out to Jim, both Jims, and at that number at 310-888-1870 with Tiber Creek Corporation. Guys, thank you for your time.
Jim, thank you.
Bye-bye.
Take care. Bye-bye. Thank you.